Ja, wunderschönen guten Morgen. Normalerweise in solchen Umständen sagt man sowas, liebe Freundinnen und Freunde, liebe Besucher der Republika, liebe neu dazugekommenen, ich bin hier zum Toncheck, ihr merkt das, liebe Teilnehmer der Recampaign, mir ist es eine große Freude und ich bin sehr dankbar, dass ich heute die Veranstaltung hier nochmal mit eröffnen darf. Recampaign zum allerersten Mal im Rahmen der Republika. Ihr wisst das vielleicht, es ist ein Teil unseres Konzeptes, dass wir als Veranstalter der Republika versuchen, verschiedene Themen mit thematischen Unterkonferenzen mit reinzunehmen in die vielfältige Veranstaltung Republika. Heute und, das ist auch was Neues, morgen die Recampaign zum ersten Mal. Hier freut es mich, verkünden zu dürfen, genau wie die Republika auch, ausverkauft. Also das war eine tolle Idee. Ich weiß gar nicht, wann ihr die gehabt habt. Irgendwann Anfang des Jahres, relativ kurzfristig also, zu sagen, einen thematischen Track für Non-Profit-Organisationen, für NGOs, für Leute, die sich engagieren, zu vernetzen, zusammen zu versuchen, die besten Ideen einfach mal auszutauschen, zu diskutieren. Und deswegen ja, halte ich mich hier ganz kurz, damit ihr möglichst viel Zeit habt, heute und morgen. Besonders gespannt bin ich auf morgen, Barcamp, Workshops richtig anpacken und viel Spaß.
Ja, auch herzlich willkommen vom Recampaign-Team. Wir sind jetzt nur wir beide erstmal, weil wir heute euch durch den Tag moderieren, Daniel Kruse und ich, Judith Orland. Aber es gibt noch ganz viele andere Leute, die mit so einem schönen T-Shirt rumlaufen. Und die könnt ihr dann ansprechen. Das sind alles die Leute, die uns mitgeholfen haben, auch die Recampaign zu machen. Wir freuen uns natürlich ganz besonders, dass wir ein Teil dieser Republika sein dürfen und sein können und dass die Republika auch dieses Thema wichtig nimmt und ernst nimmt. Wir hatten uns das Motto gesetzt, die besten Kampagnen im Netz. Wie Andreas es ja auch schon erwähnt hat, passiert relativ viel, aber von unserer Seite haben wir irgendwie gedacht, wir brauchen noch ein bisschen mehr Austausch und vor allen Dingen Best-Practice-Beispiele sind da immer sehr hilfreich. Und wir möchten in diesen nächsten zwei Tagen mit euch diskutieren, wie diese vielfältigen Möglichkeiten, die das Netz uns heutzutage bietet, auch für die NGOs gut nutzbar gemacht werden können. Mehr und mehr NGOs nutzen ja das Netz. Sie bloggen, sie twittern, sie machen eine Facebook-Gruppe etc. Richtige Standards haben sich noch nicht wirklich entwickelt, zumindest würde ich das so sehen. Aber das können wir auch noch gerne diskutieren. Im Vergleich zu Amerika oder zu England sind wir hier in Deutschland noch eigentlich am Anfang und auch das kann sich ändern. Hoffen wir, dass sich das ändern wird. Deshalb also auch nochmal genauer Best Practice angucken aus der ganzen Welt, auch was können wir davon lernen, auch für uns hier. Heute Vormittag geht es eher um allgemeine, größere Fragen nach Netzaktivismus, nach ein bisschen nach Kultur, nach Online-Strategien. Am Nachmittag wird es dann konkreter in Workshops. Da geht es um ganz konkrete Fragen wie, wie verbinde ich On- und Offline, welche Werkzeuge habe ich zur Verfügung, was ist mit Fundraising, ist ja immer ein sehr wichtiges Thema für NGOs, aber auch Community Management, was brauche ich dafür, wie mache ich das am besten. Und morgen, hat Andreas ja auch schon erwähnt, werden wir dann barcampig und das wird dann eher sehr hands-on und interaktiv und da seid ihr vor allen Dingen gefragt. Das ist auch überhaupt das ganze Ziel der Recampaign. Wir wollen letztendlich eine offene Basis schaffen, also eine Basis schaffen für einen offenen Austausch und ihr seid die Recampaign, also beteiligt euch, macht mit, vernetzt euch. Ich weiß nicht, ob ihr bei der Einladung, beim Einlass alle so ein grünes Band bekommen habt. Das sind alles die, die bei der Recampaign auch speziell dabei sind. Guckt danach, fragt die Leute, tauscht euch aus. Das wäre sehr schön. Wir würden uns total freuen, wenn wir am Ende der zwei Tage mit vielen neuen Ideen nach Hause gehen und neue wertvolle Tipps bekommen haben, wie wir das in unsere eigene Kampagnenarbeit umsetzen können. Jetzt übergebe ich an Daniel, der noch ein paar einleitende Worte sagen wird und auch noch mal ein bisschen was zum Organisatorischen.
Ja, auch wunderschönen guten Morgen. Schön, dass ihr alle da seid. Sehr schön, dass wir ausverkauft sind, möchte ich noch mal betonen, gleich beim ersten Mal. Ich habe von der Republika auch furchtbar wenig gesehen. Was ich zum Glück gesehen habe, war Jeff Jarvis, amerikanischer Blogger und Journalist, da wollte ich nochmal kurz einsteigen. Der hat über Privatsphäre geredet und Publicness, also Öffentlichkeit. Und dass wir im Moment viel darüber reden, dass Facebook und Google und wie sie alle heißen, unsere Daten klauen, dass aber niemand mehr darüber redet, was das Netz uns gibt, nämlich eine große Öffentlichkeit. Und da ein paar Beispiele davon sind vielleicht die sogenannte Twitter-Revolution im Iran, wo soziale Medien das letzte freie Medium waren, was die Menschen benutzen konnten, um sich zu beteiligen. Es gibt im Moment ein riesen Social-Media-Thema, das wir hoffentlich heute noch hören, von Greenpeace gestartet gegen Nestlé mit einem Video und vielen anderen Themen, wo wirklich mal so ein Thema sehr gut durchgebrochen ist, auch in die großen Medien. Man kann auch nennen den Firewall in China oder eben auch, was viele Republika-Anhänger bekämpfen, ist eben die Datensammlung der Bundesregierung. Also das sind so Sachen, die es auch zu verteidigen gilt, glaube ich, bei dem Thema. Okay, ich kann mir den Teil Republika sparen, das hat Andreas sehr schön gemacht. Vielen Dank nochmal, dass wir hier sein dürfen, mitmachen dürfen. Heute, ganz wichtig, wenn ihr auf das Programm schaut, haben wir ja auf unserem Recampaign-Abschnitt, könnt ihr unser Programm nochmal sehen. Das Programm, viele halten es schon in den Händen, ist auch nochmal schön ausgedruckt, mit ohne Internet, unten am Infopoint in der Lounge zu erhalten. Da gibt es viele weitere schöne Sachen. Ich freue mich selbst über den von uns kleinen hergestellten Social-Media-Leitfaden. Der ist extra sozusagen für euch entstanden ein bisschen, den kann man sich da mitnehmen. Und andere Medien, unser Medienpartner. Nochmal zur Republika. Heute sind wir noch parallel. Die haben den letzten Tag, wir haben den ersten Tag. Morgen sind wir sozusagen unter uns. Das heißt aber, dass ihr tendenziell auch zu allen Veranstaltungen der Republika Zugang habt. Und wenn alle 250 da sind, dann wird es auch nicht allzu uneng, sage ich mal, in unseren Räumen. Wir sagen euch nach den ersten zwei Reden noch, wo ihr dann rübergehen müsst. Das findet dann alles über den Hofstaat. Heute früh bleiben wir erstmal hier vor Ort. So, was haben wir dann noch? Eine nette Sache ist, wir haben uns einen Stream gebaut, jetzt, die jetzt noch nicht so tief sind im Thema, die müssen jetzt sehr gut aufpassen. Also das heißt einmal, dass wir mit dem Hashtag RC10 und mit dem Hashtag Recampaign könnt ihr auf Twitter landen und dann sieht man dies hier nochmal. Die URL kann man sich jetzt hier oben abschreiben. Auf Flickr gilt das Gleiche, man merkt hier, dass es ein kleines Auto gibt namens RC10. Deswegen scheint das da auch, das wäre gut, wenn wir da schnell vernünftige Fotos drüber laden. Also wenn ihr irgendwas knipst, helft uns mit bei der Dokumentation. Bei YouTube und bei Flickr gelten die Schlagworte Recampaign. Man sieht hier ein gutes Branding, denn es gibt kein einziges YouTube-Video auf der Welt bis jetzt mit Recampaign. Ihr könnt die allerersten sein. Ja, ich glaube, dann habe ich meinen Teil auch. Und ich komme schon zum Gerd, oder? Hast du noch was? Gut.
Ja, ich habe noch was Kleines. Und zwar, du hast noch die Medienmitmacher. Und zwar wurde die Recampaign organisiert von Oxfam Deutschland, der Agentur Nest, der Veranstaltungsreihe Social Bar. Ich weiß nicht, in unserem Stream sind wir da auch alle schön nochmal mit Logo vertreten und der CSM-Beratungsagentur Making Sense. Wir haben natürlich auch Medienpartner.
Danke, dass du mich an die Partner erinnerst. Die haben wir jetzt leider hier nicht mehr auf dem Bildschirm, aber das sind das Forum Nachhaltig Wirtschaften, der Blog Reset2, ich glaube, Blog schränkt es nicht zu sehr ein, das Online-Magazin Reset2 und Politik und Kommunikation. Auch da liegen, wie gesagt, die Ausgaben unten aus. Ob Reset2 noch einen Flyer hinlegt, weiß ich nicht. Ich habe sie drum gebeten. Jetzt komme ich zu Gerd. Darf ich? Ja? Nein? Gut. Doch? Ja. Bestens abgesprochen. Also, Gerd Lowing sitzt hier, hält unsere erste Keynote. Sein Titel ist Netzkulturen und Gegenöffentlichkeit. Das stand in Englisch da drin. Ich glaube, Gerd, you speak English as well. Das ist vielleicht noch ein wichtiger Hinweis. Wir haben die meisten Vorträge sind Deutsch, einige sind Englisch. Wenn sie Englisch sind, dann sind sie meist auch im Programm, haben sie einen englischen Titel und wir haben keine Übersetzung. Also wenn es jetzt doch einigen schwerfällt, dann müsst ihr euch jemanden mitnehmen, der euch das sozusagen live nochmal übersetzt. Ich habe das mal frei übersetzt gibt es ein Leben nach Facebook und Twitter? Gerd ist bekannt eher auch als ein Kritiker der Netzkultur. Er fragt sich auch, ob diese sozialen Netzwerke eigentlich die richtigen sind für die Mobilisierung, gerade für NGOs, wie man sie nutzen kann oder welche andere Netzwerke soziale Bewegungen brauchen könnten, um besser ihre Botschaft zu vermitteln. Er ist Professor für neue Medien an der Uni Amsterdam, Gründer des Institute of Network Cultures, das sich eben mit den Potenzialen für ökosozialen Wandel durch neue Medien auseinandersetzt. Außerdem hat er zu tun mit dem Schlagwort Tactical Media. This modern form of activism can be recognized by its use of current technology and its hit-and-run tactics, media campaigns, which are often short-lived in nature. Wikipedia hat gesagt, dazu gehören zum Beispiel auch die Yes-Men, die der eine oder andere kennt, also die etwas kreativeren Versionen des Aktivismus. Gut, also wo fangen die partizipativen Vorteile an? Wo wird es mit dem stolzen Verlinken zu viel, wie er in seinem Buch Zero Commons beschrieben hat? Und was davon können NGOs gebrauchen? Herzlich willkommen, Gerd Lohwing.
Ja, guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren. Diesen Vortrag wird auf Englisch sein. Warum, weiß ich auch nicht so recht. Aber gut, das haben wir nun mal so vereinbart. Mir ist es egal, aber weil es nun mal so ist. Ich weiß es auch nicht. Ich weiß nicht, ob das eine Schicksalssache ist. Oder es hat wenigstens von mir aus nichts mit Politik zu tun. Oder mit Sprachpolitik des Netzes. Na gut, also. Good morning, everyone. This lecture will be in English. I'm very grateful to be the first speaker at this event. I do have a lot of personal ties, historical ties to this topic. I've been working on the relation between activism and the media for at least 30 years. Been involved in a lot of movements, social movements, still are, of course. Been doing a lot of print and radio. Radio is one of my passions and still involved in that. And of course, since the late 1980s, also in first bulletin board systems, early internet, and then from 92, 93 on, it really started with you know, the opening up of the World Wide Web and so on. Okay. This is my current position. Since 2004, when I came back from Australia, I had the unique opportunity to have my own research institute. It's rather small. We are only two people, but nonetheless, we try to do a lot with little money. And coming from the squatters movement, I know exactly how to do that. So with the little money, we can do quite a lot of projects over there. And most of them are kind of related to the idea that I formulated together with a lot of others in the early 90s around this concept of tactical media. Started around 93, just after the fall of the Berlin Wall, in the midst of the Balkan Wars and a lot of changes in society towards globalization, neoliberal policies, privatization, you name it. It was a time of big changes, I think, also for social movements. I think also, and we thought that this concept of tactical media was fitting quite well in the times. The idea of tactical media is, of course, that you look for the most appropriate media in your social struggle, in whatever you are doing, and that by trial and error you kind of find out what works and what doesn't work. And I think now in the age of Web 2.0, I think we are there again. Huh? We have to find out through trial and error, you know, what is actually suiting our purposes. and what is not. The idea of tactical media, I think, is also very much related to the awareness of the visual, tactile, audio nature of the media. It means that it is no longer, maybe like in the 70s and 80s, just a tool that we use. Now, we have to be very, very aware of the specifics of all these tools. We have to know the very specifics of them and how they work best. And what this means is that we, in this concept and with a lot of the projects that we do, emphasize that for social movements and NGOs, it is best to think of these media in terms of temporary coalitions between activists, artists, and researchers. And that, and this is kind of the nature of tactical media, that we should be very, very aware of the aesthetic qualities of the work that we make. There is an increasing awareness of the importance of design and visual communication. It is not enough anymore just to have a disturbing message, a disturbing image, an urgent campaign, right? And luckily, the tools, you know, have become more and more cheap and available for many, many people to work on these issues. I think, you know, in the late 90s, after we discussed a lot of the things, of course, in the media came on, and that was kind of an important moment in time for all of us in 99, when a lot of the kind of groups and coalitions, you know, that we were talking about and that we were experimenting with kind of entered the global stage. And the Seattle riots were a manifestation of that. But even before, in the months before, a lot of us worked on the preparation of this website and of the related event. And but of course, as we all know, we're now a decade further, and you know, there are a lot of flaws with the very concept of in the media. Not only did it develop, it now has a history also here in Germany, but in many countries, not all the stories are the same. But still, we can say that this type of using the media, especially in the beginning, was very exciting, but somehow you know, ran into a lot of endemic problems that it had. Yeah? For instance, within the media, it was always unclear whether this tool was actually made to mobilize activists and to spur the internal discussion amongst activists, or whether it was really a tool to inform the broader audience and to involve and to speak with, let's say, the mainstream media. And you can see that ambivalence in a lot of websites, you know. And I think that that was one of the reasons why in the media, in the end, could not really further develop. The concept of the independent media center that was developed, which kind of was attached to major events and protests, worked very well. It worked very well on a temporary basis when there were big mobilizations going on. And these mobilizations, you know, really needed a better internal communication. In those instances, the in media worked quite well, but in between, as a kind of independent or alternative press agency or whatever, it never really, I think, took off. And also, it unfortunately did not put a lot of effort in a broader international coordination. So this is a global website, but what in the media really failed to do is to benefit from its own diversity. It kind of got stuck there in a way. Maybe you were listening to my speech yesterday that I gave in the other building, where I spoke about the rise of the so-called national webs. And I think in the media somehow also embodied this because of language barriers. There were a lot of troubles, in fact, to bring together the rich diversity of all the different websites around the world. And there was just not enough money or not enough emphasis on the international coordination. Of course, from that whole wave of tactical media, a lot came out of it. And let's say 10 years later, we just celebrate the release of the second Yes Man film. They are suddenly, you know, the kind of the ideal tactical media activists slash artists. They are really further refining the concept of tactical media in the sense that you know, they dress up and well, you all know what they're doing probably. This kind of short and very pointed, very effective interventions, you know, remain quite successful, and quite disturbing. In that also that they really transcend, let's say the activist community. They go beyond. Let's say the traditional constituencies of the social movements, and really through these very critical interventions, reach a really broad a broad audience. What we have also seen in the field is that online activism, activism in general, media activism, tactical media, give it a name. Has become a subject of academic research. Of course, this already started in the 1980s and 90s with people studying the kind of the social dynamics of so-called new social movements. But certainly over the last few years or so, we have seen a real rise of kind of you know, a more detailed academic research into you know, what we're talking about here and what we're going to deal with over the next 2 days. I think it's good to at least be aware that this is going on. Always a little bit from my activist perspective, I'm always a little bit skeptical about, you know, what the academics really contribute. But then I'm also an activist myself, at least recently. At least, you know, this is something to look at. Do you really want to be involved in this? Do you think that long-term academic research you know, will help us any further? And well, let's just see what we can get out of it. I would certainly like to see a much closer collaboration between these media scholars and you out here. I think that is really important, and I think it's not so good to just hide somewhere in a room in some department to do some studies and then to publish a paper. This is, in my view, not the way to go. This is not the way to do research, and I'm, to be honest, quite skeptical about that. I think there are much, much better and much more involved ways of academics, how they can actively contribute and maybe also reflect and critique you know, what you are doing. There is one, we could say, one subsection of online activism, one other form of activism that we should, of course, talk about and that we should involve in our discussions, and that is certainly hacktivism. Hacktivism, as it was defined in the 90s, as an active approach to disturb the online communications of big corporations, of states, and of bodies that try to censor us, that try to crack down. Yeah, this is a much more active way of disturbance. The Critical Art Ensemble has called it, has practiced it. There's the so-called electronic disturbance theater that has developed certain tools. And certainly, you know, we should realize that, especially over the next 2 days, I would like to emphasize, you know, that we should actively build the bridges towards the free software and open source community. This is really, really vital. If we cannot just reduce this topic to whether how you are using Facebook and you know, a few other of these at the moment quite successful corporate communication platforms. And it is really important for me, and I'm going to speak about this more in this presentation, that you are playing an active role in the further development of the free software and open source alternatives that are out there. We have to use them, test them, we have to critique them, and you know, this is really a unique opportunity to bring people together. This is Ricardo Dominguez. He has been actively involved in a lot of that stuff. At one stage, he was also a member of the Critical Art Ensemble. He became a staff member teaching at the University of San Diego on the Mexican border. And maybe you have heard about this, maybe not, but I would certainly like to draw your attention to this kind of scandal or this case that is building up right now as we speak. A lot of stuff has been happening over the last few weeks or so. Together with his group, he has developed this tool, the Transborder Immigrant Tool. It's been covered already a little bit, but I think not enough, because recently he's been running into a lot of legal trouble with his employee, the University of California. All right? We don't know yet, you know, how this is going to be played out and what exactly is going to happen in this case. But certainly, over the next few months or so, we're going to see a lot of media attention drawn to this case, much in a similar way as happened a few years ago with Critical Art Ensemble member Steve Kurz, who was arrested because he was himself experimenting with a few of these biotech tools that all these big corporations are using, which we as private citizens are not allowed to freely touch. It's called a Transborder Migration Tool. It's quite simple. The tool just helps, you know, with its GPS, helps people to point them at temporary floors in the U.S.-Mexican border. It points people that are on the move to places where they can find water. It's in the middle of the desert. It's very hot there. There are lots of people out there that assist migrants in their move. Some people even make this move on a daily basis because they work in the US and live in Tijuana on the other side. So this is a very, very critical tool. You could also say it's a very symbolic action. It's really with a lot of the tactical media examples, we can really ask, is this really effective or not? Is this just symbolic politics, or is there more to it? But how symbolic are our actions anyway? So it goes back to the question of what is a real action and what is a symbolic action. Discussion we of course had extensively since the 1970s or 80s. This touches on this. Is this tool really meant for migrants, or is it just meant to disturb the mainstream media, which it has done, of course? People are very upset that American citizens are assisting Mexican and Central American migrants to cross the border. This is something that, it touches a nerve, of course, in society. Okay, now I would like to go to where we are at and what is the topic of today's conversation here, and that is Web 2.0. Here you see all the signs, and we're all already aware of them. Yesterday I touched briefly on my definition of Web 2.0. It certainly wouldn't be this kind of collection of corporate websites. For me, Web 2.0 simply means the phase of reconstruction of the internet after the dot-com crash, the rise of popular software that finally works, where you don't need to do a lot of coding, but where you can actually start to work with the actual tools, even if you are not a programmer. So it's all got to do with the democratization of the media, which also is related to the rise, first of all, of broadband, always on connection, the growing rise of multimedia content, moving images and so on, the general kind of rise of high-speed computers and connections, and on top of that, the mobile applications. So this means that there is an opening up of internet. The internet is now mainstream, I would say, even here in Germany. It is now the mainstream medium. And the problem is, of course, that print and broadcast media have a lot of difficult time accepting that this is the case, that the actual population, the vast majority of the population, is using this medium, and that we, in fact, should no longer speak about new media. That's nonsense. It's been with us for quite some time, but not only that, the vast majority of people are using it in one way or the other. That is disturbing. What we see then is, of course, that ever since the 90s, there's a big, big kind of influence coming from the United States in which, certain ideologies, certain discourses kind of are spread, but they are also translated into code. They are translated into network architectures. So if we are talking about, let's say, the Californian ideology or techno-libertarianism, or if we're talking about, the very conservative points of view of Lawrence Lessig and so on, if we're talking about all these kind of very specific, it is more than just an opinion. these opinions, and here you look at Henry Jenkins. He's a big fan of Web 2.0, promoter of not so much political activism, but he's particularly interested in fan cultures. And so he's probably the most well-known of them in that particular field. We always have to be quite kind of aware, you know, that this is a very specific, rather conservative political agenda that comes with it. There is almost no, you know, really interesting kind of progressive or emancipatory agenda attached to this. And from a perspective of social movements, this is at least something, you know, you need to be very aware of, that we should maybe try to disconnect that very specific ideology that in the 90s, of course, caused the whole dot-com boom and then the dot-com crash and then reconstructed itself over the past few years into the so-called Web 2.0, that this agenda, you know, should be disconnected from the actual applications that we use. And this is, of course, what a lot of activists kind of struggle with. I like the functionalities of Facebook, but I don't like Facebook the company, right? It kind of sums it up. Yeah, but how can we do it? How can we do that? It starts probably, you know, with just a growing awareness of the very, very specific political agenda of these so-called techno evangelists. Yeah, and Jeff Jarvis, of course, is one of the main evangelists these days, and you've heard him speak maybe on Wednesday or yesterday. It's a very specific agenda, I would say that we need to kind of, you know, formulate our own agenda, and this is I hope, you know, that will be one of the outcomes of this summit, yeah, where you come together and maybe also, you know, in these initial meetings, kind of say, okay, let's not only design clever campaigns, but let's go beyond that. Let's create some tools that a lot of people will be able to use over time. Now, this is for me is a very inspiring website, and if you are want to really engage into this topic, how do activists deal with or not deal with or relate to Web 2.0? This is, for me at least, the best site. It's a very recent one. It only started, I don't know, 1 or 2 years ago. DG Active, a world of digital activists. And it's one of the sites that, you know, it's something, or you could also say, well, this is something that indie media should have done, but is not really doing, you know, to have that kind of explicit clash of cultures. You know, yes, we want to use it. How do we use Twitter and so on? But also, you know, what are the downsides of it? At what point do we bring activists in danger? This is something we need to talk about. This is kind of how, according to DG Active, kind of the world of digital activists looks like, and I really like it because it comes, in fact, quite close to what I mentioned earlier about the coalition between artists, activists, and researchers. Here you can kind of see something similar. Where people, the programmers, are also very much involved as builders of websites. People that are the probably more the traditional activists, and the thinkers. They're probably most of you maybe are in the thinkers, or I don't know. I would be curious to find out if that's the case. Probably a lot of you will kind of bring home new ideas from this conference. So you probably, or maybe you're even in the middle somewhere. Also interesting that they mention entrepreneurs there. I think there is also a side to that, which, to be honest, I don't really mind. I think that's in theory that's a good thing. And if you were around yesterday at my talk, you might remember that I'm really emphasizing that in this world we should also think about how to maintain certain levels of professionalism, that we should be skeptical about the appraisal of the amateurs, and that we should at least think, you know, how programmers, activists, and designers, and a lot of other people in this field can somehow make a living over the long term. And this is, of course, how NGOs came into being. NGOs, understanding, in my experience of it, are organizational leftovers of social struggles. The social struggle is happening, and the NGO is kind of an organizational residue of it. They don't come into being out of the blue. They don't just present themselves. No, these are people who have been doing a lot of stuff. They come together and decide, no, we want to really go for it. We want to do it in a much more structural, better way. And this is how, of course, NGOs come into being. And this is something I think that we should pay a lot of attention to. Because at least in my understanding, and this might be my personal conviction or might be a theoretical statement, but it is very important when we're talking about Web 2.0 to keep in mind that the struggles of the movements are coming first. We don't have kind of an organizational question of, okay, how are the NGOs doing? No, in my perspective, there is a primacy of the social movement, and all the rest follows after that. If there is no social movement around an emerging topic, an urgent topic, it is very, very hard to organize it. And it also becomes a little bit questionable, and this is would be my thesis of today, my central thesis of this lecture, that it is of no use to utilize Web 2.0 if there is no active social movement behind the topic. Yeah, so you cannot resolve that lack of involvement by utilizing these tools. Yeah, the tools, in my understanding, and that's my central debate here, my contribution for this conference, is that Web 2.0 comes at the very end of a trajectory and not at the beginning. It is very interesting, I find, that we can see in this website of DG Active that there's a real movement and a discussion of this particular generation. A lot of them are young and very involved, mainly in climate change, but also in a lot of other stuff, that are kind of rethinking this moment, you know, where in a certain struggle Web 2.0 tools become really productive and really amplify something that is happening, and where it just remains some kind of, you know, media activity, social awareness, yes, but for how long, micro awareness, what is it? You can develop a lot of kind of concepts for that, how that micro micro activism is should be judged. Some people are really negative about such developments. And well, here we can see some of the examples that the DJ Active website and their handbook for Facebook activism deals with. There are a few really influential examples. This is one. Anyway, these days there are many more. And one was just mentioned, the Greenpeace Nestle campaign, which I think is really reaching a new level, I think, in online activism. So I think that's a good sign. A lot of it maybe has been learned also over the last few months or so. But the environment itself is also changing.
Yep.
Here we see, what they say about the changing privacy policies of Facebook, and the website DG Active warns activists, for making all too clear, what they stand for, and particularly what their network is about. And this becomes quite difficult. You want to use it as a tool to reach a lot of new people. At the same time, you don't want to expose, your own social network, or at least not too much. Yeah, it depends, of course, a little bit whether you want to, where you want to do anything subversive or surprising, but there's always a surprise element in a lot of the actions that are happening. Even if they're not, let's say, illegal, you have to be aware that a lot of people on the other side are following, what you're doing, and you can be entirely mapped out, who you are, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and so on. I think this is something that you all need to talk about, maybe also find out by doing what you can find out about others. And if you see what you can find about others, you'll also know what others can find out about you. Yeah, and is this really what you want? In general, yes. But of course, there is always the Web 2.0 suicide machine. it was recently forbidden and cracked down. It was developed by WORM and New Media Initiatives in Rotterdam, in the Netherlands. And Facebook has is now trying to make sure that none of the activities of the suicide machine servers can no longer influence the Facebook. You have to be aware of that. It is becoming increasingly difficult to erase what you are doing. So you cannot say, okay, we'll do a campaign and then we close it. And then, then what? All the information there will remain. So, and particularly Facebook is making it very, very hard for individual users to delete tracks or even to delete their identity. It's next to impossible. Yeah? And this machine, of course, has helped a few people in that. It claimed, at least originally, that it was really thorough, that it was doing a really good job, but we also know that this is not really entirely true. There are a lot of traces left, I would like to also say something about this wonderful man, Eugene Morozov, which I think is really this superb kind of net critic. I mentioned a few yesterday in my talk. Nicholas Carr, the writings of Jaron Lanier, and so on. But he's the one originally from Belarus, now in the United States, who is kind of a really, really good kind of net activism critic. Yeah, I can highly recommend his website and his writings, because he really shows our weak spots. You know, and he's not some kind of cynical guy. I think he's doing it really with the best of intentions. But nonetheless, these are people that we need. We need our own, let's say, critics that ask this rather difficult question. You know, has Twitter, for instance, been really effective in Iran? Yes or no? Has it harmed people? Did people go to jail or even got death sentences because they used Twitter? Or has it indeed played a productive and active role in the mobilization and the internal communication? And I am with Morozov and with others quite skeptical about this. I think we should be very, very careful using Twitter, for instance, in the streets, you know, during actions. It's a pretty dangerous tool, because it can be traced immediately. And that's, of course, one of its strengths, but also you make yourself very, very vulnerable. He has written a lot also about different cases, the case of the so-called Twitter revolution in Moldova is one of them. The Iran case, I think, is still unresolved. And I would really, really like to read more detailed studies about this, because when it happened, I had the kind of suspicion that, particularly because of the American foreign policy, it was very much pushed up, as a hyped up item in the news. It served certain political agendas, and not exactly the people in Iran, not exactly the people who were in great danger out on the streets of Tehran and elsewhere. So it, from an activist perspective, it was you know, at least a dubious thing. At least, let's say, we put a lot of doubts in it. I like this picture a lot, because you know, you can see that she's holding her mobile phone in her left hand. There's certainly a lot of, you know, a lot of strength that comes out of these sudden outbursts that we see happening around the world. They're often quite brief. Social protests these days are often, you know, quite violent, very big, but very brief. And this goes together, of course, with the tendency towards real-time media that I spoke about yesterday, and that many in this conference are speaking about. Social unrest is becoming shorter, but also, you know, will mobilize support more and more quick in a shorter period of time. So maybe this is also something that you need to be aware of, and we all know about that in campaign design. We need a lot of time to develop the campaigns, but the campaigns will roll out and will happen in an incredible short amount of time. And when they are picked up, they really blossom, and they can blossom in hours, literally. That kind of compression of time is a real concern, especially for activists, because it is you got less time to raise your concerns, to communicate your arguments. Yeah? And more emphasis will go into the kind of the symbolic politics of media, into the images. I don't know if I have time to show the, yeah? Okay. This is a really inspiring video that you should really try to get your hands on and show to your group or your constituency. It's called 10 Tactics. It's been developed by tacticaltech.org. You can find it on the internet through the URL called informationactivism.org. These people have been doing this kind of stuff also for the last 10 or 15 years, and they made a beautiful one-hour video, and they kind of summarized their tactics, their advices to you all, because it's primarily targeted at this audience, right? This is a video that is particularly for you. And it's called 10 tactics, and I've listed them here. Mobilize people, witness and record, visualize your message. I've talked about that, the rising importance of aesthetics. Amplify personal stories, add humor. That's a real kind of tactical media thing of yes men and so on thing. Investigate and expose. Well, that's WikiLeaks, we could say, which was prominently dealt with yesterday. How to use complex data. This is the whole issue that I said also about info visualization. You got less time to communicate more complex topics. And one way, there are ways of dealing with this. Use collective intelligence. Let people ask the questions, manage your contacts. Okay, I wanted to just briefly look at the intro, just to give you an idea of this. Okay, sound.
It's about using new spaces that have opened up because of the internet and even new media as well, even cheaper forms of digital technology, whether it's video or other platforms such as online publishing.
Has to be people-centered, has to be participatory, and has to be strategic use of different communication tools.
Torture crimes were rarely mentioned on TV, so Torture Initiative highlighted it.
A project I was involved with was the featured layers on the Darfur crisis in Google Earth. It greatly raised awareness of the issues there.
We developed a system that uses shortcut SMSs, and we get people sending in queries about the amounts of money that have been allocated for projects.
But one of the things that we did was to help people find out where to vote.
Using technologies, you can combine the collective voice of people.
During that period when we started, we discovered different uses for it in organizing relief work and facilitating reconstruction later on.
The fact that 700 people got together and took a rally out was a great thing, and it was one of the biggest impact that we've had.
By making people laugh about dangerous stuff like dictatorship, repression, censorship.
That became like a kind of narrative platform to build an actual movement that is demanding democratic reform.
And it's about making use of all these new spaces to do, you know, to do old-fashioned activism.
Okay. So you can contact Tactical Tech and get the video from them. go back. Yeah. Of course, this Avaaz is quite well known. It's the most successful website for online petitions. There are local, national online petition sites. I'm not aware of the one that is mostly used in Germany, but it is something that I have I'm a bit ambivalent about it. I think it works quite well once a campaign is really on its way, but to deal with difficult issues in the beginning, certainly the online petition doesn't work, it's really something that if you want to set your targets, you should do at the very end, at the height of a campaign, when you've already got a lot of media attention. And then this could work. I would like to point here at what I see as the future, and the future for me is a move away from the corporate platforms like Twitter and Facebook towards seeing social media as a tool. And this is, I think, what they originally are at the moment in the development. They are temporarily, they are huge platforms which kind of introduce us to the social logic and the possibilities that are out there. But, you know, eventually Facebook, like many, many other of these sites, will crumble, they will fragment, they will fall apart. For the simple reason that people prefer to install their own tools on their own websites to reach their specific audiences, because in that way they are in control about you know, all the settings, the privacy issues, and so on. And Ning is a very good example of where this is going. The Ning is a kind of a hybrid at the moment. It was created by the Netscape founder, Mark Andreessen. He's still very much involved in it. It's pretty successful, and it kind of shows us where social media are going as a tool, where people have much, much more control over these sensitive issues. Who can find out what we're doing? Who do we allow in? How do we communicate? Yeah, and I think that is a good, if you want to just experiment with it, please do so, because it tells you something, you know, where it's going. But this, in my view, is where it's really going, Crabgrass. It's an initiative by RiseUp.net, American grassroots organization. And Crabgrass claims that it's, you know, it's fully open, it's free software, open source. You can install it on your own server, and you will have the full kind of Twitter and Facebook functionality, but you are in control yourself. At the moment, it's still in beta, but it is coming. So keep an eye on this, because I think for a lot of social movements, this is really the ideal tool, and this is a direction where it's going anyway. Much in the same way as with blogging, we have seen the move from away from, let's say, blogger.com, blogspot.com, and so on, towards WordPress as a tool that you install yourself. This is eventually also what's going to happen with social media. From my perspective, what we have been doing over the last few years is that we've further developed this concept of organized networks. I've been shying away a little bit to organize yet another kind of tactical media reunion event of my specific generation. I'm not so interested in that. Kind of Next 5 Minutes was influential. It were four huge events that happened, but I think it's better to move on. And the concept of organized networks, I think, is much more promising in that way, because it tells us something about, you know, how people prefer to do activism these days. And that we not in offices, not in huge kind of NGO structures, but networked. But the problem is, of course, with networked, is that we face this problem of the so-called weak ties. People have not enough commitment. And this is not because they are lazy or because they don't like you or no, but also because the technical infrastructure is such that all these social media that are around are in fact promoting weak ties. They are not promoting for you to get better organized. There's a whole reason why that is the case. I'm not going to talk about that so much in the history of weak ties. But okay, this is kind of where we are at. Last year we organized a big event in Amsterdam called Winter Camp, where we invited 150 artists and activists to work with one in 1 week for us. So if you want to know more about this whole issue, you can just look for Winter Camp. And I would like to close this presentation with this, to me, very moving and inspiring. Again, you know, I think tactical media project is called Tankman Tango. developed by the media activist Deborah Kelly. And what it does is that it has mobilized activists and artists around the world to dance what she called the Tank Man Tango. And as you remember, here it is. Yeah. Okay, this is the website. Yeah, and it's called the project itself is called Forget to Forget, and it kind of explains here. As you remember, you'll see.
Remember 1989 when spring bled into summer in Beijing's Tiananmen Square? The gathering of the people turned into a wave, demanding reform, chanting for change. The people's petition against corruption calls for free speech, for collective responsibility, and for democracy echoed round the world. Remember when the government sent the military into the square, bearing weapons meant for war? They fired on their own people, turning June the 4th into a day of massacre. Remember June 5, when the tanks rolled again on a defeated Tiananmen Square? A man stood before them, bearing only shopping bags, stopping the tanks' advance. He became Tank Man. Remember Tank Man? As the tanks tried to evade him, he defied them. He dodged, he wove, he stepped up. His actions spoke for the voices silenced by force. Dancing the Tank Man Tango, we trace his steps. We mark time. We dance him into memory. On June the 4th, 2009, forget to forget, do the Tank Man Tango. Democracy is never completely won, but must be constantly worked on. Sun Yat-sen.
Okay, thank you very much for your attention.